This is the Voice of America's worldwide coverage of the flight of Apollo 15. Now, over 294 hours into the mission, the spacecraft Endeavour and its crew are preparing for splashdown and recovery. The landing site is some 500 kilometers north of Pearl Harbor, Hawaii, with the prime recovery ship USS Okinawa standing by for splashdown. That's scheduled 30 minutes from now at 20 hours 46 GMT. For the latest on Apollo 15's landing preparations, we take you to the Manned Spacecraft Center and VOA correspondent Rhett Turner.
Well, everything is ready on board the waiting aircraft carrier Okinawa there in the Pacific Ocean, about 500 kilometers north of Hawaii. And everything is ready aboard the good spaceship Endeavour as it's headed straight toward the center of that figurative hole in the sky and entry into the atmosphere back to Earth. Here's Mission Control. The spacecraft is preparing. The astronauts, Dave Scott, Jim Irwin, and Al Worden, are preparing now to separate the large tank, or the rear service module portion of the spacecraft, from the conical command craft for re-entry to Earth. They're about to throw away the big rocket engine and all of the oxygen and hydrogen and consumables, as they're called, which have been there to aid them on this 12-day journey to the moon and back. That's to occur in about a half minute from now at 294 hours, 43 minutes after liftoff from Cape Kennedy. With us to bring you his comments on this return to Earth today of Apollo 15 and to assist us in going through the timeline of events, the many things happening, is astronaut Fred Hayes of Apollo 13 and backup commander of the Apollo 16 mission, the next mission to the moon. Should have separation about now. I don't know. We should get confirmation of that through what is called the air-to-ground circuits from the astronauts.
They're about 40 seconds away, Rhett.
Did you say 40 seconds? Okay. Yep. Thanks, Fred. And what do you think of the looks of the weather on our closed-circuit monitors out there in the Pacific? Would you like to be landing in this weather?
Well, the sea state looks very good out that way. It's a little hard to tell just looking what the winds are, and of course that would be a great effect, how much swing you get in affecting the impact.
Well, let me give you those. As the last reports we had on winds were about 10 knots, waves 3 feet, very calm seas, visibility 10 miles, the sky is partially obscured. There's about a 50% cloud cover. It's like cumulus down to about 2,000 feet above the surface. Overall high scattered clouds also, and general visibility 10 miles.
We show separation.
There it is. That's what we were waiting for, the separation of the service module from the command module of Endeavour. On board the aircraft carrier in Okinawa, gee, looks like everybody's out in his navy whites there. That's sort of part of the ceremony, isn't it?
Yes, and you can see they got quite a few banners around.
Do you remember what some of them said there when you were watching a moment ago?
No, I didn't read. A lot of the fellows I noticed had signs up sending a message to someone back home, it looked like.
So all of these men aboard the Okinawa, as the television camera pans around the ship, a few of them have a special message for somebody back home. Of course, everybody back home knows that their man is on this ship.
Recovery reports all forces on station ready to support.
Apollo 15, Houston, comm check, over.
There's a word from
Houston 15, loud clear.
That's
Roger, same with you.
That was Al Worden, I believe, there.
And Houston 15, we got a good step.
Roger, looks good down here. Thank you.
Which seat is Al in for the entry, Fred?
He's in the left seat.
He's flying the entry, right?
Yes.
The command module pilot.
Dave is in the center seat, and Jim's in the right seat.
Is that the normal procedure on all of the Apollo missions now?
The only exception was Apollo 8. On Apollo 8, without a limb, the commander flew the left seat all the way. But ever since then, the command module pilot has flown the entry.
Because he has really been in charge of that craft for most of the flight.
And it's a matter of the training load, too. It's it's such a big load learning a limb that to split up the workload, it's just a lot better to give him that job.
Mm-hmm. So Al Worden is the voice we will hear mostly during this entry back to Earth. We can also see four helicopters, four of the rescue craft, as they are doing what's called orbiting around the aircraft carrier, and there's a portable television camera in one of the helicopters going along, and very possibly that's the camera from which we will first view the spacecraft descending on its parachutes back to Earth. The television pictures from the carriers have improved immensely just in the last few missions as the color cameras have been
velocity
improved.
Velocity now 30,280 feet per second.
30,280 feet per second. The spacecraft will get up to 36,096 feet per second before it comes burning into the atmosphere, and that converts to 39,611 kilometers per hour, and that is fast. Do you have much sense of speed at all? You don't see the Earth, Fred, so I presume you don't really know you're going that fast.
Just
that sounded like Dave Scott
yes.
looking at the navigation side, I think.
15 Houston, say again.
Roger, the horizon check was good, and the CMC guidance needles look good.
Roger, copy. Very good.
Yeah, Dave has made a check there. He's supposed to be at a certain pitch attitude at a certain time, and if the guidance system, the platform, is accurate, then he can look out the window and verify the Earth horizon being in the right place. And he said that all checked out. And there are a couple of needles, guidance needles, on the ball, the eight ball, we call it, that you look at for attitude reference inside. That also is a clue if the guidance system is properly geared to do the entry. And he said those look good, too. They were pretty well centered.
So Dave Scott is watching the navigation instruments as Al Worden is being the pilot.
You have several means of making the entry. One is with the primary guidance system, which is to date is the way every entry has been made.
No, that's automatic.
That's all automatic. However, there are certain key points where you cross-check it just to make sure it's going to do its job. And if it doesn't, then Al Worden has the capability of taking over and flying a system, an alternate entry system through the gadget we call the EMS, the entry monitor system.
The entry monitor system. This is a graph in two dimensions in which you follow a moving line, more or less.
That's a simple
way of explaining it, I think.
It presents a velocity range to go type of picture. And you can correlate that with G to end up reasonably close to the target, even with that backup system, like maybe within 20 miles, I'd say you could pretty consistently get.
Mm-hmm. So by watching this backup system, the pilot on board there, in this case Al Worden, watching the a comparison between the automatic the autopilot method, the automatic mode, and what he can do manually. He can switch over if he has to very, very quickly. You just heard a moment ago there are 10 minutes until entry, now 9 minutes and 20 seconds. We're watching a countdown clock here from Mission Control. Landing, splashdown, should be about 22 minutes from now. 22 minutes, 40 seconds, according to the clock.
To back up and answer your other question, they're looking out
the speed, yes.
Yes,
sense of speed.
The attitude they're in and the direction they're looking, it's not very obvious that you are moving it fast.
Mm-hmm.
We had in Apollo 13, it was obvious to us a little further back because we were still in the limb at this time, and we were looking out through the big limb windows right at the Earth, and it was noticeably growing. It was getting bigger, so it was obvious to us we were really roaring back in.
That wonderful limb that was your lifeboat back to Earth on the very hair-raising Apollo 13 trip around the moon and back, which Fred Hayes here, on which Fred Hayes was lunar module pilot. When the command module separates, what is the attitude out the windows in reference to the Earth? Do you see, are you pointed toward, how are you pointed?
They're basically in the entry attitude, only they yaw,
meaning
left right. 45 degrees off of the attitude and shed the service module. And it, of course, gets a thrust impulse and is rolled as it separates, so it gets some added velocity.
It's sent off to the side of
the entry path.
Mm-hmm. Now, are the windows up or down? Can they actually see the Earth down there as they're getting pretty close?
They can see her horizon there because they were essentially at the attitude for the horizon check, except now yawed out 45.
Mm-hmm.
So the service module is being sent off away from Earth, so to speak, and mm-hmm. cocked off 45 degrees from their entry pad.
Well, Fred, let me briefly preview what will occur when they...
Apollo 15.
Well, here's a call from...
Good, about a minute and a half to hand over to Orion.
Now, that's capsule communicator astronaut Bob Parker you're hearing here in Mission Control. At entry...
The Orion is an Apollo range instrumented aircraft. Will be handling communications through these aircraft.
At the beginning of entry, it takes 13 minutes and 29 seconds until landing, according to the predicted figures from Mission Control. About 18 seconds after hitting that outer residue of the atmosphere, some 400,000 feet up, the blackout will begin. This is when electronic communication with the spacecraft is cut off, as the heat generates this great plasma field, as it's called, around the spacecraft and prevents radio waves from going through. That will last from 18 minutes after the beginning of entry until about 3 minutes and a half. Then the blackout will end. You'll hear some of these figures being called out from Mission Control. Then about 7 minutes and 44 seconds after the beginning of entry, the drogue chutes should come out, the drogue parachutes. These are the two small parachutes which pull out the large landing chutes. Then 8 minutes, 32 seconds after the beginning of entry, the main parachutes should deploy, should open up, and then splash down about 13 and a half minutes after the beginning. That splashdown, of course, depends on how much the wind there at the lower altitudes drifts them just a bit across the surface of the sea. But the seas do appear to be quite calm. A 3-foot waves, that's nothing more than a gentle swell, really, is it, Fred?
Now, certainly for the big Pacific, mm-hmm. and just looking at it, doesn't even look hardly like it's 3 foot. So I would expect at least the water state does not pose any problem at all for giving them a very hard time on landing. And the winds, are not very high either. It's unfortunate the cloud cover is such that it may delay somewhat the... pick up on the television of their, mm-hmm. their
particularly
vehicle
at the lower
down.
Elevations. There.
Yes,
they will be coming. They will be coming through some low cumulus clouds, about 700-800 meters up from the surface, and extending another 500 or 600 meters. And then there's some high cirrus cloud, just scattered. That's usually about where we spot the parachutes, is when they're coming through that layer. When you're floating down, the windows of the spacecraft are all straight up, so you can't see the Earth. Here's a test through one of the Araya aircraft. Let's see if this works. That's it. No reply through the Araya aircraft. 4 minutes now until the entry begins. 4 minutes. 4 minutes and 3 seconds. About 17 and a half minutes until splashdown.
Now, when you're on the chute, you can't see the ground, but you can see the ground when you're higher up during the entry phase, because to control the range, the computer in controlling the spacecraft is making it roll around, so you ultimately have your windows canted upward as well as your upside down.
From entry interface, communications through the Araya will be noisy. And we do not have a display up at the moment showing velocity or distance.
This broadcast is coming to you worldwide through the Voice of America, the return to Earth of Apollo 15. This is Rhett Turner in Houston with astronaut Fred Hayes, as we're describing for you, no matter where you may be in the world, this conclusion of a wonderful trip to the moon, the most scientifically rewarding of all of the manned missions so far. At the moment, the rescue forces are attempting to test out communication between a range instrumented aircraft, and they call it Araya, an acronym. This is a C-130 Hercules that's flying high in the sky. And usually they try to get their receivers tuned ahead of time before the spacecraft comes through the atmosphere. It's usually the Araya aircraft we first hear from when the blackout ends. They say S-band blackout ends 3 minutes and 30 seconds, but I presume we get VHF through the very high frequency, a different mode of communication, rather fast after that through the Araya, don't we, Fred?
Yeah, the blackout, of course, influences both systems. I mean, you cannot get through the ionized sheath with either radio.
Do we lose this S-band or radar tracking after the entry begins? Is there a tracker on board the ship which can utilize this mode of tracking?
They may have radar tracking, but that would be independent of the S-band downlink. You lose downlink for S-band as well as voice VHF. Mm-hmm. The whole business goes with blackout.
This is the really technical part of this communication system. We've been using what is called the unified S-band system all the way to the moon and back.
Velocity 35,710 feet per second. Range to splash 1,725 nautical miles.
There's another call through the Araya aircraft.
This is the Voice of America's worldwide coverage of the flight of Apollo 15, now 194 hours into the mission. 294 hours into the mission, we take you to Les Higby for downrange information.
In the recovery area, the weather is apparently perfect for the splashdown. There are large amounts of blue skies, some low cumulus clouds and high cirrus clouds, but there's good visibility. The weather is just about as ideal as it could be. The winds are very gentle, about 13 kilometers per hour. There are four helicopters airborne at the present time, orbiting the carrier, ready to do their job of picking the astronauts from the sea after they splash down.
Now back to Rhett Turner at the Manned Spacecraft Center at Houston.
Well, we're talking about communications, Fred, and there's another one of those glitches. Here's mission, what was that?
1,307 nautical miles.
That's Jack Riley, the voice of Mission Control, who's...
Entry interface.
Okay, we're at entry interface.
The entry is beginning. 6 seconds into it now. Now, that noise you hear is from the signal from the Araya aircraft. Blackout should begin right now.
Right. And they're feeling the first onset of G, and even though they're only going to experience about a little over 6 G's in the entry, it's going to seem like a lot more than that because of the time last 3 days have spent at zero G.
The G's, the gravity forces, the pull of Earth. Now, as this pull of Earth begins to accelerate, this gravity force, as they are burning into the atmosphere, they're pitched down about 6.5 degrees. That's what's called for. It's expected that the maximum G-forces to be exerted on the astronauts during this entry will be about 6.2 times the normal gravity of Earth.
And yeah, actually, the reason for the G's in this case is the deceleration of the spacecraft, the drag that is created by the blunt shape of the spacecraft, and you're reducing velocity, and that's the same as putting on brakes in your car or something, and so they're decelerating at a rate of 6 times the acceleration of gravity.
They're now going through the maximum heating on the outside of the spacecraft. None of this heat gets through to the inside because of the ceramic material, which boils away and takes that heat energy with it. This is one of the complicated areas of physics, which is easily explained by saying you're converting the energy of speed into heat energy and dissipating it out into space behind you.
Right. And we have a lot of fat in our heat shield. It is, of course, designed for the steepest possible entry and a G-loading of up to 20 Gs.
Now, this re-entry began down below, just west of the Johnston Islands, southwest of Hawaii, at about 175 degrees west and about 15 degrees north. And the splashdown point, as they come down through the atmosphere, will go up to, and where are my figures for splashdown?
It's latitude and longitude.
Okay, 26.13 degrees latitude, 158.13 longitude. Let's see, now, 2 minutes and 53 seconds into this reentry phase, about another minute and a half before the blackout should end. What's happening right now, Fred?
Well, they're past the point where they have to worry about skipping out anymore. 2 minutes and 12 seconds, they had passed the point where they should have been below circular velocity.
Mm-hmm. That is circular velocity. That means they're below the speed at which they will skip out. I reiterate that.
So we're about 10 seconds away from end of blackout, and we should maybe be hearing from them through the Araya.
Right, 337, 333, right. 34, 35, 36, 337. They should be coming out of blackout right now. I gave an erroneous countdown figure about a half minute ago.
Should be coming out of blackout now.
Landing about another 9 minutes
Apollo
and 40 seconds.
Houston,
there's a call from Mission Control. Let's see if we can hear them. 3 minutes, 55, 58 seconds now since the entry began. Fred, I notice you have two maximum load factors here. Is this where the entry goes up and down just a bit?
Apollo 15, Houston. How do you read?
Let's see.
Okay, EMS and GS, I agree within about 10 miles. Everybody's fine shape.
Very good, Dave. Good to hear you.
It's Al Warden.
Was that Warden?
Yes, he said both the backup as well as the primary entry guidance systems compare very well within 10 miles, and which makes you feel very comfortable, and they're in good shape, he said.
His voice character changed a bit as it's coming through this aircraft, this VHF mode of transmission.
Yeah, that relay mode kind of makes you sound like you have your head in a bucket, I guess. It might, there's an echoing quality to it.
4 minutes and 58 seconds, 5 minutes now since the entry began, well out of the blackout period, and everything looks good, and you, as Fred pointed out there, there was Al Worden's first report being relayed by what is called a range instrumentation aircraft.
The ship has radar contact.
The ship has radar contact. They're now tracking them there.
Showing range about 100 miles.
Still way up. Still coming toward them, too, at this position directly north of Hawaii. Some 500 kilometers north of Honolulu. That's the touchdown point. You mentioned another a point at which that was a good time hack, Fred, at 6.6 minutes when they reached 90,000 feet. There's a spacecraft and another message.
15, this is Houston. Read you loud and clear and copy.
What happens right now at 6.06?
Well, that's we're on board their water boiler. Pegs, the water pressure pegs, because of the increase in the density of the atmosphere they're getting into at 90,000 feet, and it's a mark for the lunar module pilot to start a watch going so he can cross-reference time from that point to when the drogues are supposed to come out and then when the main chutes are supposed to be out. So
just another alternate method of
it's
timing
to back
yourself.
Up all the auto systems that normally throw all that out for you free. And also to back up if the onboard little aneroid altimeter fails, you have a way of determining when you should manually put your chutes out.
Mm-hmm. We're getting back into more earthly terminology now when we talk about barometric altimeter. Was that Al or Dave?
Copy, very good.
I had a hard time distinguishing the voice there.
But it was an onboard readout from the spacecraft, from the astronauts.
It looks like they have a clearer sky, at least in the direction they're looking now. That's
The television camera has now been pointed up into the sky in anticipation of the first glimpse. Still about another 30 seconds before the drogue chutes should deploy, should pop out. The forward heat shield is popped away, and then these lines are released, pulling the drogue chutes out.
The drogue should be out now.
Right now. Then it takes about another 40 seconds after that to the drogues get the lines out and straight. That's mission control confirming that. Drogue should be out. And then the mains should deploy in about another half minute.
Your contact.
So,
1-2-0 from the ship.
I gather we're hearing some of the rescue forces' voices on the air-to-ground link also, as it's called, the astronaut-to-mission control circuit. Beautiful day out there in the Pacific with some light, fluffy cumulus clouds.
They should have mains now.
Main chute should deploy right now. That was a bit garbled, that word from the spacecraft.
And he should be on the mains now.
This is kind of the last milestone. You don't really feel like you really have it made till you get to see those.
I bet you felt that way till you saw him out the window, too, didn't you?
That's right.
On your mission. That's one of the rescue forces. There they are. There's the spacecraft on the television tube. The three main chutes deployed. The camera is on it. We see the spacecraft gently floating down toward the ocean. All three chutes have opened properly. A very clear picture coming into us through mission control here. Bob Parker telling the astronauts we see them. Still above some of those low clouds, gently drifting back down toward the ocean. Okay, here's Norm Guerin in Washington.
For downrange and splashdown, here's Les Higby.
And for a description of the situation in the recovery area, let's go now to David Horowitz on the USS Okinawa.
We can see one of the helicopters heading into a rather puffy cloud bank. In fact, we've got two helicopters heading up. One of them being the swim helicopter with three frogmen aboard.
There it is.
But still no visual sighting of those three big parachutes, orange and white in color.
On the flight deck, the astronauts have reported themselves in good shape.
That announcement, as you see those three orange and white parachutes lifting slowly into the sea, the astronauts report that they're in good shape. Those parachutes silhouetted beautifully against a white puffy cloud out here in the Pacific, about 330 miles north of Honolulu. Frantic activity on the deck of the ship, everyone rushing to the front to watch those parachutes gently lower down into the Pacific. One of the parachutes apparently did not open fully, but that will cause no problem. It just won't slow the command module's ascent as much as it ordinarily would have. With three parachutes, the command module would have come down at about 32 feet per second. Now it's coming down at 36 feet per second. And it's designed to work with two parachutes. The landing might be slightly harder, but no problems are really expected. I would estimate that those parachutes are about 2 to 3, maybe 4 miles from the ship. There's very little wind out here. And those chutes are just gently lowering that command module down. The astronauts report that they're in good shape. And the recovery helicopter with those three Navy frogmen aboard now moving into position. What a beautiful sight. And there was impact, splashdown, and you could hear the cheering of the men on this ship. The 600 men aboard the USS Okinawa. It might have been a little bit of a hard landing, but it was a beautiful landing. And there you see the helicopter moving into position that will drop the frogmen into the water. That will start the recovery operations of the command module Endeavor and its three astronauts coming back from their longest and most challenging trip to the moon. The seas are calm enough that it doesn't look at this point whether it will be necessary for the astronauts to inflate those uprighting bags that are in the top of the module. You can see some of the chute lines. You can see some of the chute lines from that main parachute still attached to the command module. What this will do is just maybe pull that module out into the sea a little more and not keep it in a stable position. Those lines will be cut post haste by the frogmen as soon as they get into the water. And there you see the helicopter circling, hovering overhead, making its approach to drop those frogmen into the water. Okinawa is still about 7 miles from the command module, which is in perfect position. Those white caps, or what look like white cap waves, some of that is being caused by the downdraft from the helicopter rotors. One of the helicopters is moving in an attempt to recover that parachute, which could snarl up operations if it's not cut loose from that module. It could drag the command module a little bit out at the sea. It could also foul up the frogmen as they attempt to attach the flotation device to the outside of the command module. Two helicopters in position. You know, it's interesting to note, when we saw that splashdown, people aboard this ship were maybe a little more excited than ordinarily most people would be, because back on launch day on July 26th, about 3 hours after liftoff from the Cape, we saw the command module from the Apollo 15 streak through the sky over the ship at about a height of about 90 miles, going at 18,000 miles an hour in the last of its Earth orbits before it went into translunar injection, headed toward the moon. We saw it going, and now we see it back on Earth. And the crewmen aboard this ship, I'm told by NASA officials, were some of the few people in the world that saw that afterburn and watched the command module go into its translunar injection. The command module looks surprisingly shiny. Its exterior is a gold mylar, a heat-resistant material. You can see the lines from that one parachute, which didn't open, still attached to the command module. Ordinarily, when the command module splashes down, there's kind of a little guillotine device on the apex of the module, the top of it, which cuts those lines and frees the parachutes from it. But that chute didn't open, and sometimes that can be done manually. As yet, I don't know. We haven't been told why that wasn't done manually and why that chute is still attached. But it apparently isn't serious. There you can see the first helicopter with the Navy frogmen aboard. What they're going to try to do is to lower down a hook to try to snag that parachute, much like a grappling hook. The seas are relatively calm. The seas are relatively calm, and there's very little wind. Usually the helicopter pilots like a little wind because it makes it easier to hover over the command module. The frogmen also like some waves because it makes their job a little easier when they're in the water in terms of attaching the flotation collar to the module. Recovery operations by these helicopters being carried on by Naval Helicopter Squadron 1 from the Imperial Beach Naval Air Station in California. There you see the command module with the line still attached from that one parachute that didn't open. That's kind of a big parachute. About 82 feet. The canopy is 82 feet. And it has a line on it that's about 131 feet long. And you can imagine the stress on that line as the command module re-entered just before a splashdown. Just before a splashdown, Mission Control in Houston said that they had voice contact with the astronauts. The assumption aboard ship that the astronauts are fine. The ship has had radar contact with the command module. Swim helicopter now hovering about 15 feet above the Pacific. 330 miles north of Honolulu. And there go the first two Navy swimmers into the water.
Swimmers are in the water.
Command module isn't really bobbing around too much. The sea is relatively calm. The first job of those Navy frogmen will be to attach a hook to the outside of the command module in a ring. The astronauts have just communicated by voice to the ship that everything is okay. They're feeling fine. Getting back to the procedure, a hook will be attached to one of the eyelets on the bottom of the command module. It, in turn, will be attached to a line 50 feet long. At the other end of that line will be a parachute about 8 feet in diameter. That parachute will be opened underwater and will serve as what is called a sea anchor. Doing that job will be almost like opening an umbrella underwater. We haven't seen the Russian trawler since before splashdown, but we've been informed that the Russian trawler is now steaming into a position where it can watch what's going on just off the front of the Okinawa. The sea anchor is now in position. Its main job is to prevent the command module from drifting. As that command module pitches a little bit in the sea, which is relatively calm, the bottom of it is black. When it left Earth, it was white. It naturally was charred during reentry. It's surprising that the command module Endeavour is as bright and shiny as it is. In the past, that gold mylar coating has come back a little singed and brown. There are five windows in the module. At this point, what the astronauts have probably done is turn their ventilating system on and now have inflated manually a switch which activates an air compressor and inflates some bags, nylon bags, which will help further keep the module in an upright position, although there's no danger of the module either tilting on its side or turning over in these calm seas out here in the Pacific. The 131 feet of shroud lines or parachute lines that was attached to the module on splashdown has now been cut by one of the frogmen out at the scene. These pictures are coming to you from a special photo helicopter, which is out there with the primary recovery helicopter and one of the helicopters carrying the Navy frogmen aboard. Just in case, aboard the recovery helicopter, and there's no indication that a doctor will be needed, but there is one aboard. NASA physician Dr. Clarence Jernigan, himself a proficient swimmer, can be deployed from that recovery helicopter if needed, and of course he's not needed. We have had voice contact with the command module. The astronauts say they're feeling fine.
You are listening to the Voice of America coverage of the recovery of the Apollo 15 astronauts. Now we return you to David Horowitz on the USS Okinawa.
And there is the flotation collar dropped in the water for the frogmen to attach. As I said earlier, the frogmen usually like a sea that pitches a little bit because it makes their job a little easier. That job to attach that flotation collar to the outside of the command module.
Flotation collar has just been delivered to the water.
We haven't seen that Russian troller in some while. It's out here somewhere around the ship. We wonder whether it's lost interest or not. It's been quite interested in these operations since Okinawa left Pearl Harbor for 3 days of simulated recovery exercises back in mid-July. Then it disappeared for a while and showed up about 2 nights ago. The Navy swim team involved in this recovery operation, the underwater demolition team 11 from Coronado, California. What the swimmers are doing is they completely remove the collar bag and then hook part of it on. We're about 3.5 miles from the command module now, observing the flotation collar being attached to it. And there you see the Russian troller, which is about 5 miles from the command module, steaming in the direction of splashdown. We just wonder how close it'll be. During the simulated exercises back in mid-July, the troller came to about 1,000 feet. Of the USS Okinawa. Still trying to jockey that flotation collar into device, that device into place. First thing that will be done is that the whole collar will be attached to a hook on the back of the command module. The leader of that swim team 11 from Coronado, California, is Lieutenant J.G. Fred Schmidt. Mr. Schmidt holds a number of world swimming records and was also a practicing attorney in Chicago before he joined the Navy. The flotation collar, now around the command module, it was opened much like a shower curtain, and it's completely inflated. There's been no problem thus far keeping that command module upright. The astronauts aboard say they're feeling fine. The Okinawa has just sent a message to the Russian trawler to please stand clear to the north of the ship.
The flotation collar is inflated.
The Okinawa has been in radio contact with the trawler, telling it to stand clear of the recovery area. So far, that Russian trawler has been very courteous in its relations with the Okinawa. Two swim helicopters and the primary recovery helicopter now on station. You can see the frogman balancing himself outside that command module. Seems to be peering in the window. The astronauts came down in their white service coveralls. They did not come down in their pressurized suits, as it's a constant wear long sleeve garment known officially by NASA. After that tragedy of the Soyuz 11 cosmonauts in Russia, there was some talk that the astronauts might have to come down in their pressure suits, just in case there was any loss of pressurization in the command module. Of course, there wasn't. But NASA decided anyway that it was a remote possibility, and the astronauts were allowed to come back in a relatively comfortable position. That orange-colored package that was just dropped out of the helicopter is a raft.
Recovery raft that's just been dropped into the water.
It's called a recovery raft, or an egress raft, technically an egress raft. Of course, one of the problems, going back to what we were saying before, if the astronauts had come down in their pressure suits, in case for some reason the command module did not land upright and the astronauts would have had to leave the command module under emergency conditions, it would have been very difficult for them to swim. The Okinawa has again signaled that Russian trawler Malfa to stand clear. It's been closing in on the recovery area.
Recovery raft is being inflated.
You probably just heard the announcement over the ship's public address system. The recovery raft has been inflated. It'll now be attached to the outside of the flotation collar. Okinawa is now just a mile and a half away from the command module. It's off the port or left side of the ship. A beautiful day for recovery, a beautiful splashdown. Everything so far going perfectly, the astronauts feeling fine. We'll tell you about a little surprise that the Navy frogmen have for the astronauts. They were busy on the ship yesterday afternoon, painting the bottom of that raft. In the bottom of it, it says, "Welcome back, Apollo 15. Astronauts Scott Irwin and Warden." And there's a picture of a big frog. And on the shoulder of the frog is a falcon, symbolic of the name of the lunar lander, Falcon. All that compliments of Underwater Demolition Team 11 from Coronado, California. It'll be interesting to see if we can get any facial expression from the astronauts when they do come out of that command module, when they see that on the bottom of the raft. Latest communication from the ship is that the Russian tug Malfa has agreed to stay away from the recovery area and is heading out toward the horizon now. The recovery helicopter now is being signaled in by the frogmen. It will drop a little package down to them. In that package, and you can see it being lowered now, in that package are three sets of what look like water wings. It's actually a life jacket. frogmen have positioned themselves so they can grab that recovery net, which has been modified from what the Navy used to call a Billy Pugh net. NASA officials don't seem to like the old Navy name. That little package will be handed in to the astronauts. For Apollo 15, this will be the first manned mission to the moon, that there will be no quarantine, which means that the frogmen who are taking part in the recovery operation will be able to get as close to the astronauts as they want to get without wearing any special face gear or any other special equipment to decontaminate themselves. The reason for that was a simple one. Scientists have now determined that a quarantine isn't necessary because of the absence of life on the moon. And the danger of moon germs coming back being slight. And there you see the hatch of the command module open. That little package of water wings or flotation gear being passed into the astronaut. We can't see who is accepting it. We do know that when the command module came down, Major Alfred Warden was sitting in the couch to the far right. It'll be a simple matter to place that gear on, and one of the swimmers seems to be talking to the astronauts. So far, no problems, no complications. An almost perfect mission to the moon, and an almost perfect splashdown. Almost perfect because as yet the astronauts are not aboard Okinawa, but they should be in just a few minutes. Of course, we can't see this on our television screen. I'm high above in the superstructure of the ship, and as I look off the rear of the ship, or the fantail, I can see that Russian trawler moving along the left or port side of the ship. Standing clear of the recovery area. We're not sure who the first astronaut will be to go up. If it's according to the way they're seated inside the command module, going from right to left, it would be Major Alfred Warden, Colonel David Scott, and Lieutenant Colonel James Irwin. But usually the captain is the last to leave his ship. Of course, all three astronauts are Air Force men, and maybe the Air Force operating procedure is a little different. We hope to get contact from the recovery helicopter as to which astronaut will be the first to be hoisted up in that recovery net. Another interesting little sidelight. All three astronauts not only are Air Force men, but they all attended the University of Michigan at one time or other. We told you about that drawing on the recovery ramp. It'll be interesting to see if we get any reaction from the astronauts. The picture you see is coming from a helicopter with a television camera aboard, just hovering over the area where the command module dropped down, almost right on target, about 330 miles north of Honolulu. This being the northernmost recovery in the manned space program, the closest recovery to Honolulu or the Hawaiian Islands. The hatch is being opened again. The frogmen can, if necessary, communicate with the astronauts by using portable transmitter that they have. The swimmers have now signaled to the recovery helicopter to move into position. The sea looks a little rougher on that command module, but not because the sea is rough. It's rather calm today. It's just a downdraft and spray from the helicopter rotors whipping things up. And there's the first astronaut out on the raft. We can't tell who he is, but you saw him with his multi-purpose, long-sleeve, white outer garment. Easy to detect. We don't know what his reaction was as he looked down into the bottom of that raft and saw that mural drawn by the Navy Park team. And here comes the second astronaut. Again, difficult to identify them. The second astronaut, whoever he is, dipped his hand in the water to see what it felt like, and it probably felt pretty good. All three astronauts in the raft, the recovery helicopter moving into position. On board the Okinawa, we have almost all of the 600 crewmen, except those who are involved in running the ship, standing off to the port or left side. And here comes the primary recovery helicopter into position. The commander of that helicopter, Stephen Coakley, of Burlingame, California. For him, it's a day with two happy meanings. First of all, he's commanding the helicopter group, taking part in the recovery. Second of all, it's Commander Coakley's 16th wedding anniversary. There you see the astronauts sitting in that recovery raft and waiting. The delay is being caused because it appears that there's a little difficulty in closing the hatch on the command module Endeavour. One of the astronauts giving the frog team members a hand in doing that. Of course, that command module is pretty important to this whole mission. Aboard it, a couple of 100 pounds of samples taken from the moon surface with the film that was shot on the moon and off the moon, and as the Endeavour circled the moon in orbit. And here comes Recovery One, trailing its recovery basket, or net, although it really is the net. The bottom of that basket is stiff. The sides of it are fortified, so there's not much give.